and welcome to another all singing, all dancing episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I am AD Packham, and we are massaging your ears with the brilliant assistance of oldfootballshirts.com. Well, so far it's two games down and two defeats, and our shot-shy Seagulls have yet to register a goal as we settle into life in the top flight. Last week's defeat at Leicester leaves us in the bottom three, although we are above Palace, on alphabetical order. We have also added more firepower. Oh no, we haven't added more firepower, because just before we went on air, the Albion have announced that the signing of Ghanaian Rafael Domena will not be going through after they discovered a heart defect, and our thoughts and wishes go to the player. Also this week, a less than convincing performance from a scratch side just about got over the line against Barnet in the League Cup, thanks to a goal from James Tilley, under the new lights at the Amex. And we now face the prospect of being away at Bournemouth twice in a week. But the big news this week is, of course, that new signing, Jose Izquierdo, has got a micro pig called Peter. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares.
Is that the brother of Pepper?
Yeah, we'll come to that later on when we talk about micro pigs, Al. Yeah, that was, of course, the voice of Alan Wares, and we're brought to you a new raw virgin in the shape of Jamie Walker from Latest TV.
Thank
is
you
with
for
us
having
in the
me
studio
on.
As well, and it's very warm in here. We're just trying to come to terms with this news about Rafael Domena. I just worked out how to say it after all this time, and we this news comes up, but it's massive news.
I was about to say, Jamie, I mean, we've discussed this on the way in. Mm. What's your first thought here? But welcome to the Albion Raw, but what's your
Thank
first
you.
Thought when you saw the breaking news that, you know, there's another person we're not signing?
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. And yeah, my breaking thought was, oh, we were going to have another striker and now we don't. And now it's going to be either Toma Hemed or Glenn Murray up front against Watford. And neither of them have very much pace. And that's the big worry, I think, for a lot of Albion fans, because we just went in those games against Man City and Leicester. Man City, maybe people didn't expect us to create much, but against Leicester, maybe people expected a bit more. We just offered nothing going forward. You could just see that you couldn't see where a goal was going to come from, and it was really tricky when Toma got into attacking positions. And there was one moment he did a turn past the defender and he tried to run onto the ball and he just couldn't. His legs just wouldn't get him there. And you just think that's where we need that extra injection of pace, and it looked like we had that, but unfortunately now that's gone.
Well, Domena was had a phenomenal goal-scoring record, and obviously our medical team has discovered this heart defect, as they did with Connor Goldson. Now, it seems to me that he passed a medical a few months ago for FC Zurich, and there was a preliminary one done prior to us announcing this transfer. But it seems that we seem to be really hot on picking up these defects at the moment, and to have... we had Malcolm Stewart in the studio when we did the breakfast show prior to the Man City game, and I asked him a question. I said, Malcolm, how difficult is it to fail a medical? And he said, well, not very.
Right. I mean, the point is that you, first and foremost, you cannot play fast and loose with someone's health. You're expecting various people to put an awful lot of stress and strain of their limbs and their joints and what have you. And obviously, therefore, the crash bang wallop of football anyway, they're obviously putting their organs, you know, on the line. I mean, possibly less so than certain other sports, but...
Are we talking Adam Allowed style here?
Well, yeah, I don't mean as in literally leaving your lips on the pitch. But, you know, yes, I think that this is highlighted something. I don't know if we have a coincidence here, the fact that they could actually find an issue with Connor Goldson and they found an issue with Rafael Domena. It's not that obvious at the moment as to whether it's the same thing. We don't know. None of us here are medically qualified. All we know it's quote, a heart condition. This is what's being reported. But the point is that there's two things here. One, the Albion screening and their medical system is very good. So even if they hadn't done this thing and he was still okay to play, and you consider he's passed a medical, that's one thing. But two, you're actually then putting him at risk at later time. He might, you know, be able to have a 10, 15-year career. Who knows? But if he's actually got this condition, which is only going to be degenerative, problematic, who knows, and it's picked up early, then good for them. Now, I don't know whether FC Zurich have been embarrassed into this by not being able to pick up or not mentioning something that's gone ahead. But what you don't do... is that you don't risk someone's health for the sake of a few goals. And if the club have actually found something, even if the possibility that it's a minimal amount of risk, who knows, then no, you don't muck about. And, you know, like I say, as you said at the top of the show, we wish him well, and whatever it is the issue is, that you know, it's treated and sorted. But I do concern myself for him, is that he's going back to Zurich. The Albion have actually said, no, he's not going to play for us because he's got a heart condition, and yet Zurich are going saying, well, we're looking forward to him playing for us again. And you're thinking, well, hang on, does he have a heart condition? You know, is there an issue to him playing or not?
Well, this has only just been announced in the last hour or so. We're recording this on a Friday night, for those of you who are listening to this, on Monday or whenever you are.
Yeah.
I'm sure that more news will come out about this further down the line. But firstly, this is the Albion Raw, and we will come back and talk about what we're going to do when we talk about the transfer window a little bit later on. But we are welcoming Jamie Walker, who, like I said, he is a Raw virgin into the studio. We're going to ask you about your Albion supporting history in just a second. But first, just a quick reminder that we've got a big show coming up, which we're plugging to death. And I will be doing it. I'm going for the record of 8 times in this show today.
Oh, really?
No, I'm not really. But we're doing a show with Bob Booker and Mark McGee at The Comedia coming up in 12 days' time today. Or if you're listening on live,
6 days if you're really listening to us. Yeah,
but it's tickets are available via The Comedia box office. And we've also got a competition coming up later in the show today where you can win
3 Albion related books. Very good ones they are too. More details of them when we actually get around to doing the competition.
But Jamie,
yes.
So you have been an Albion supporter for how long?
I'd say my entire life if I could, but obviously, you know, at a young age, you're not young enough to register what football is, really. I mean, the first Albion game I went to was early 2000s when Brighton took on Boston United at the Withdean.
Wow.
Won 4-0 in the pouring rain. It was a fantastic game in terrible weather.
In the pouring rain doesn't really zero in as to which game it might have been.
It was LDV Vans Trophy, if I believe.
That's a bit of a baptism of fire, isn't it? I think that is what it was called.
I remember the game issue. How old were you at the time?
I must have been probably about 10, maybe 11 or 12. Something like that. I've been a season ticket holder for over 10 years, so maybe a bit young, maybe 9 or 10.
Did you go with your mates? Did you go?
I went with my dad. My dad took me, first Albion game. My dad used to be a season ticket holder at the Goldstone.
Right.
And then, unfortunately, I had to give it up, when I came along, because I did that to him, unfortunately.
So was it the roar of the Withdean 2000 and, well, probably about 1,500 people that were there
for
that game?
Yeah, it was the feeling of getting drenched in the rain, watching football, and I don't know, it should have put me off, but it really didn't. It might have been because my second ever Albion game was when we beat Man City in the League Cup. So I went from 0 to 100 very quickly there on the scale of Brighton games.
That's a very interesting point, though, because both of those games were midweek games.
Yes.
And you were 10, so that's
late nights for me, past my bedtime.
Didn't you go to school?
I may have a couple of times, if any former teachers are listening to this.
Okay. Which school were you at?
Primary school, it was a school called the Fold School in Hove, which is since closed.
It's folded.
It's folded, right. It has. There may have been a couple of, you know, fakings of illnesses days after football.
We've all been down that particular road. Yeah.
But, it's just a great experience, I think. It's so much fun. I think my first ever game was my granddad took me to Highbury to watch Arsenal against Bolton.
Right.
And so to go from that to then go to watch football at the Withdean was very different. But I found it so much more appealing.
In what way?
I don't know. I've always just had this connection with lower league football and non-league football, and the fact that...
And rubbish grounds.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that the audience, the crowd, the fans just get so much more into it. There's so much more passion about it. And, you know, you go somewhere like the Emirates now and it's not the best atmosphere you'd expect from Arsenal fans.
Well, you have the level of expectation there, which is ridiculous, isn't it?
Well, I've got the stats here. It was the 4th of November 2003.
That sounds about right.
And we won 3-1.
That was it.
There were four goals.
There were 4 goals.
Yeah, but it was 2003.
Yeah.
And that was... Mark McGee was probably the manager, was he?
November 2003. If he was, it was one of his first.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the team to have known about that. And I just went because my dad got tickets. He was like, do you want to go football? I'll go, sure.
I'll tell you what, we'll ask him on the 6th of September at the Comedian.
We can do that. Okay, that's two plugs. You're going to get about closing
in now on that number.
I know he's going to get. He's going to raise his bat to 50 here, isn't he? At this rate,
that's great. There should be a prize for doing that.
So, who is your in all these 14 years? We realise nearly 14 years. Yes. Who is your all-time favourite player?
Favourite player in terms of the one I liked the most, or the one that I thought was the best?
Entirely up to you.
In terms of the player I liked the most, the player that was the one I had on the back of my shirt and the player that I really liked watching was Dean Cox.
Right.
I really liked Dean Cox. I thought he's an absolutely fantastic player when we were at that level, and I thought he was great, you know, following his career now at Orient and Crawley. It's great to see that he's still performing at that level, and he deserves it because he's a great player. I thought he was really hard done by when Gus Poyet came in and started leaving him out of the squad. I felt really bad for him because I thought he could still
perform. Think if he had the option, if he had actually stayed, that he could have actually become a better player and become a player that's still here now?
I don't think he'd still be here now, but I think at the time there was definitely that potential for him to play for us in the Championship had we then, you know, obviously still if he'd stayed, got promoted that season. Mm. I think there was still that potential for him to perform at that level. I think that now I wouldn't obviously have him back, but I think that for the level he's at, or he has been at the last few years, I think he does a fantastic job. In terms of the best player I've ever seen in an Albion shirt, that would be Vicente.
Okay.
Because he is.
Yeah.
Phenomenal, yeah. There's no comparing.
I was about to say, can you imagine Dean Cox, the gobby Dean Cox, being sort of working for anything longer than half a season under Gus Poyet? It'd have booted him out in no time.
Well, okay, well, let's move on to last Saturday then. Mm. And we went to the Crisp Bowl it's not called that, it's the King Power Stadium now, isn't it? At Leicester. And, there's not much we can really say. I mean, you alluded to it at the top of the show that we were...
Matt Ryan needs to sort his goalkeeping out. I don't say it's the whole thing, but when a goalkeeper makes a mistake, it really notices. And in the first minute...
Especially when he's made a few in a row in a few games.
He hasn't made the most wonderful of starts, has he?
No, and that's the thing, because against City especially, he was making some really good saves to start with.
Probably had to.
But I mean, he was doing this against Atletico as well. So,
well, he dropped one wicket against. He's won a game basically.
Yeah, and it's the sort of thing you could forgive with Stockdale because he made some great saves, and it was one maybe every 10 games. But you're noticing it as much now,
to be fair, I mean, the Boo Boys were after Stockdale on his first few appearances as well, but he didn't make this many wickets, and there's always an air of confidence about Stockdale, and I look at Matty Ryan, I just look at, he looks like a kid who's wearing his dad's jumper.
Well, is that? I think you said that last week as well. No, there is, the thing is, everything is so much more under the microscope when you're in the Premier League. Stockdale came when, you know, we were all right. We'd just been in the playoffs. We had a not particularly good season the first time. His first one wasn't a particularly good season. accusations of podginess, said the podgy bloke. And then Ben Roberts came in and sorted everything out. I'd like to think, hopefully, that Ben Roberts can sort out Matt Ryan. But I don't even think that this sort of... I mean, again, you're alluding to his size. I don't even think that's necessarily the issue here. I mean, Ben Roberts was never hugely tall. I mean, he's not sort of 6'5" or anything like that. It's just the shot that came in, it was straight at him and he spilled it.
Well, I mean,
you cannot get away with that in the Premier League.
Well, let's just rewind to the beginning then, because there was two changes to the starting lineup, which was Glenn Murray came in for Tommy Hennett and Jamie Murphy kept his place after coming on for Izzy Brown in the first game. Knockhart still only on the bench. But, I mean, as we've all alluded to, the game plan was out the window after a minute, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to keep it sort of simple, keep it tight at the back, and you don't. That's not to say that, you know, you stop making it tight and you sort of, you know, go hell for leather for it, because there will be, you know, if you're going to play reasonably enough, you'll create yourself some opportunities.
But I mean, if we're going to be critical here, I mean, we can't just go after Matt Ryan. Although we will come to that bit in a second, but the fact that it was our attack that broke down. And Morris should never have been allowed to get that far forward.
No, Suttner was, I think, at fault for that first goal. He should have closed Morris down sooner. He should have done something to stop him, even if it was...
So this is Morris we're talking about, though, isn't it?
But, I mean, it's the sort of one where I think that he's... I think Suttner's had a bit of a struggling start as well. I think he doesn't close down players quick enough. He doesn't get to them fast enough. And I think, to be honest, I think our game plan went out the window that first minute, but I think it would have been more attacking, generally, because you saw that first attack, we were committing bodies. And I think when Leicester hits on the counter, all of a sudden we thought, we can't attack as much now because this is a good attack.
It's only Leicester.
Exactly. Everyone was going into it thinking, we can get a win here. But no,
it's as if Suttner had not seen, not last season, but the season before, and realised, hang on, Leicester City are the champions here. And Mahrez was there. Absolute linchpin, you know. Everything was zeroed around him. All right, you had what's his name, Conte, Kante was,
yeah,
you know,
was,
Conte, yeah.
Yeah, he was the main man, but Mahrez was the, well, he was the one that took over from Knockhart. So when you got sort of someone who's Knockhart plus, you close him down. You do things to actually not make him, but you know.
And you think you should know that from playing in the Bundesliga when you're up against, you know, teams like Dortmund and Munich. You should be used to having to close those sort of players down, that sort of quality.
He looked frightened. He still looks frightened.
I alluded to this last week as well, but do you think that the wholesale changes that have been made to the starting lineup, as I can understand them doing it at some point, but maybe some of these players should have been more phased into the team?
I won't say there's been wholesale change. I mean, it's about half the team, but you know, even
that's a wholesale change to me.
I think in the Premier League you've got to make that many changes. I think they will take time for them to bed in. I think that that's expected, and I think that maybe fans are too quick to jump the gun and judge us because we played the champions elect and the former champions, you
absolutely,
know, in our first two games.
Yeah.
But I mean, my theory is that we've been successful for the last two seasons playing a certain style, a certain formation, and with certain personnel. Now, I don't think that it needs some tinkering. It needs more pace. But it certainly didn't need all of the changes all at the same time.
But the changes haven't really been up front too much, have they?
But
that's where we need them, really.
But the thing is, I mean, let's put it this way. Supposing Suttner had started and it was absolutely, you know, clear that Bong was not going to get back in the side, then you think, well, it's perfectly, you can see what's happened here. Or if I mean, we're still sort of, the jury's still out on Prupper. And he, you know, he hasn't been, you know, particularly sort of great in the first two games.
He's been terrible the first two games.
His
passing has been very slack. He seems to, majority of his passes seem to be without looking where he's actually passing the ball.
Well, I'm prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I mean, I just think that there are certain changes that didn't need to be made.
Give me a for instance.
For the first game, certainly I would have started with Sidwell rather than Prupper, because
just because the experience.
I'd agree with that.
Prupper had only actually been here 2 days. He hadn't had a chance to train with us, hadn't had a chance to really bed in and get to know his teammates at that point. And I think it would have been an opportunity to give him a week or so to get...
An opportunity.
But by that logic, would you then say not start Izquierdo against Watford?
Izquierdo's not going to start against Watford, he says, when Izquierdo starts against Watford.
Well, he must have been training with us for a few days already.
Yeah, he's been here. He's only been in and around the squad for a few days, but he hasn't actually been able to train until he got that international clearance. So
you're not allowed to train if you don't have the clearance?
No, not at all, no.
He's
working, isn't he? So he's had an opportunity. So, I mean, I think that we'll see Knockhart starting today.
I think Knockhart needs to start, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially if they've got a very prodigiously talented, but a youngster playing at fullback, because they've got a fullback issue. So if Knockhart can, I mean, you're just thinking Knockhart against Watford, what could possibly go wrong?
Just don't let him take any penalties.
We had more possession in this game than we did against Man City, but again,
well,
we didn't
really
seem to know what to do with it. So, but I mean, there was one instance where we got a bit of bad luck, in my opinion. Where the ball was floated into Glenn Murray, who heads it back to Jamie Murphy, who unleashed a shot which cannoned off Wes Morgan's arm. And that, for me, was a penalty.
No, his hands were behind his back.
He moved his arm to the ball. If it hits your arm, it's still handball, whether it's behind your back or not.
I can see it from both ways, because his hand was behind his back, but you do see him slightly move it out.
He moved his arm towards the ball.
I thought he was actually diving in order to sort of like make himself big. His torso big. Because, I mean, you said that Glenn Murray's...
I was about to show you what I was doing. We're on the radio.
Yeah, no.
But no.
What you can't say is it's deliberate because he's got his hand out of the way. He's not moving towards the ball. I mean, this ball's travelling towards him. He's just throwing himself one way or the other, not having a clue where the ball's going to go, hoping it's going to hit him. It did hit him on his upper arm.
Well, replays have suggested that it was a penalty.
It's the sort of one I'd say that if it went for us, I'd say it's a penalty, but if it had gone against us, I would have felt very hard done by.
I think it's hard done by. If your arms are behind your back, then it shows the intent. You don't, you know...
You're not intending to ever touch it with your hand.
Yeah, quite. I mean, and when it's
disagree.
Like that... I mean, I you, yeah, but you said that the one against Sheffield Wednesday wasn't a penalty. You know, Glenn Murray stuck his hands up in front of his face. So, you know.
No, I didn't say. I said it. What I didn't say wasn't a penalty. I agreed it was a penalty. I said it wasn't sending off.
All right. Okay.
Oh, I thought it wasn't sending off that one.
I thought it was. Yeah. Too, but yeah. Because yeah, he can use his. He's allowed to use his face to stop it. So.
But it's so beautiful.
How can you ruin it?
Okay.
Can a ball in the face.
I mean, you've all got your. Let us know. Let us know what you think. I mean, was it? I personally think it was a penalty. I'm going with the pundits of Match of the Day who agree with me as well.
How can the pundits of Match? They didn't talk about
it.
They didn't talk about it at all.
The commentator.
Yeah, they didn't talk about the offside goal either.
No. Oh yeah, they didn't talk about anything.
They didn't show it.
They just gave us nothing.
Yeah,
we're dirt. We don't exist. We have an existential crisis on Match of the Day.
I feel like in terms of that and just in TV coverage in general, although we seem to get a lot of games, I feel when it comes to reporting us news-wise or on highlights-wise, people are very against showing a lot of Brighton stuff.
Yeah,
we're like one of those clubs that people are like, oh, we'll gloss over them a little, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, but what do you know about TV stuff? Oh, hang on. Right, okay, moving on. We did concede a second and it was from a corner, and again, there was defensive frailties, and unfortunately, Matt Ryan's positioning and his starting
position was absolutely fine. It's just there was no one at the back post.
I was very surprised we conceded a goal from a corner. That's something I didn't expect from our side.
Yeah, no, it was just two players at the. I mean, Duffy was at the back post. There was no one. There was two at the back post. That's the thing. I mean, it's all right. It looks worse when it is two because it's only one of them that's going to head it. But even then, if one misses it, the other one will get it. And you know, no, it's poor.
We didn't really create an awful lot. A shot from Tom Ahmed where he tried his luck from 20 yards and he finally forced Schmeichel into a save. Mm. But we didn't really offer an awful lot going forwards.
No.
And I think...
youth and pace. This is what our guest said last week, Nick Japanic. He said, that's what we need, youth and pace.
Yeah, Nick's absolutely right. That's exactly what we need. You can see it in Toma and Glenn. I have this ongoing argument with my brother where he says that Glenn is better than Toma, and I say, like, no, Toma's better than Glenn, but for different reasons.
Oh, we should have had your brother on as well, actually.
But they're both not what we need, because I think that Toma's the one that can control the ball and act on that, and Glenn's the one that can actually put the shots away and, you know, get those chances in.
But you've got to create the chances.
Yeah,
though,
Glenn's first touch is not great. So if you put them together, they would make one sort of almost passable striker.
Yeah, make actually a bulldozer. Yeah.
I think over the next couple of games, we're now with Solly March and Knockhart working in tandem, possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, we might actually be able to see a little bit more.
I would seek to presume that we're going to be a little bit more Man City aside, because you can't really sort of judge that. But at home, at least, we'd be a little bit more brave and adventurous, and therefore play March and Knockhart together.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
You'd hope so. Away from home, you can understand that you want to be a little bit more cautious defensively.
But away from home last season, that's what let us down. We were poor away from home last season. That's what nearly cost us it.
My point is that March and Knockhart would have been starting, so that issue isn't necessarily the thing here. Yeah, I mean,
we've got Izquierdo to bring in as well. So.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, hopefully he's just not another... I'm sure we'll talk about it with the Barnet game, but I think there is someone clearly that we're going to be dropping soon.
We're going to talk about Izquierdo in a minute. Anyway, okay. So, anyway, you are listening to the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And I am sat here with Alan Wares and Jamie Walker. I'm Ailey Packham, and we are brought into in association with OldFootballShirts.com. And this,
you said, it's a doozy.
It's a bit bright.
Is it?
It's, yeah.
I can see it through the paper.
It's giving our floodlights a run.
Okay, right. In describing it, it's green.
It's very green.
Very green, but it's another one of those that's a bit like a Formula One shirt, as much as it's got hundreds of advertisers on it.
Yeah, it looks like it's American because of the amount of advertisers. It's like something you'd see in like NASCAR or something.
Well, yeah, it does. He hasn't photoshopped out the badge here, and it says San Miguelito, which I think is must be Spanish for a small bottle of beer.
Mm. Is it the official football club of San Miguel?
San Miguel, in which case that would be the Philippines.
Yeah.
But
I like the yellow as well. It's almost as if they've put Green Giant Sweet Corn on a football shirt.
It
works well. I like it.
I'll tell you what it looks like. It looks like a scrapbook. It's green with a lot of scraps on it.
It is.
Okay, I'm going to say something Hispanic, but apart from that, don't know.
Well, again. Here you go then. This shirt caught my eye. Is that
no,
12
really?
Sponsors on the front of the shirt?
Gee.
No idea how many more on the back, says Phil. It says, this will be your first tongue twister of the season. It says, this is the 2017 away shirt of Panamanian side Academia the football sporting the San Miguelito.
Miguelito. Yes.
I'm putting it out there right now. I think it's Argentina.
No, he just said it's Panamanian.
Oh, he did. Yeah.
Miguelito is Little Michael.
They play in the Liga Panamena, the football in the top flight league in Panama.
Panama has more than one league, I think.
Has more than one club.
Yeah, there's some breaking news there.
Up until 2007, there was Sporting Cockle. And they are based in Panama City at the Estadio Bernardo Candela Gil. With a capacity of 2,400.
Nice.
Their entire current squad is drawn from the Panamanian nationals, including the fabulously named Fidel Escobar, who plays as a defender, and midfielder Darwin Daranel Pinzon Camanano.
Phil, are you making this up?
No.
This sounds one, very made up. It sounds not right.
One historical player that caught my eye is the marvellously monikered Percival Antonio Piggott Cumming. Who retired from football in 2017.
He sounds like he used to play for MI5.
He said, I struggled to find a link with the UK, but the best I could come up with, apart from the UK players listed in the 2016 Panama Papers scandal, is Ernesto Arturo Sinclair Chavez, who in 2010 played a handful of games for Arsley Town in the Evo Stick Southern League.
What credentials.
That's Phil, a hell of a league.
That is, yes.
Great. And
it's actually down to the country or the area of Panama that hastened Scotland's union with England to form the United Kingdom. But that's another story entirely.
And, and of course, Phil Shelley from oldfootballshirts.com will be doing a live reveal of the shirt of the week at the Comedia on the 6th of September. Tickets available from their box office.
That's three.
That's, yeah, counting them down.
We're counting them, yeah.
We should have like a bing or something that goes up every time. It
could be. Let's go with, Jamie, you are working on Latest TV.
Yes.
So what's the latest on Latest?
Well, it seems like there's always something going on Latest. There's never a dull week. But sports-wise, we actually do quite well.
You're the sports department, aren't you?
Yes, yeah.
Are you it?
I'm not the full sports department anymore, no. I sort of rose through the ranks. I was at one point the only person in the sports department. So I gave myself the title of head of sport because I thought it was justified. But now I've taken a bit of a back step at Latest. I'm doing a few less days there now. But our sports coverage is still excellent. We have the non-league show, obviously, which is great. That gets really good numbers, really great, really good reviews as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just a perfect example of how non-league football can be advertised in a local community.
Give us a, for instance, as to what happens with a non-league show.
So
for those that haven't seen it.
So for those who haven't seen it, we send our cameraman down with our presenter, Dean Kilford. And he presents a show. He does a bit of pre-match with the fans. They'll do commentary throughout the whole match or from the whole match, and then cut it up into a 44-minute edit show.
Okay.
And it goes down really well. You do a bit of post-match with the managers after it, and it goes down well with our fans. I think it's Brighton is one of those places where if you're doing local TV, having a show like that that supports community football and things like that is one of those shows that goes down really well.
And presented by Des Lynam.
Yes.
Yeah. Because when it first started, there was quite a lot of Brighton related shows. There was a breakfast show which famously myself and Al did a few years ago.
Yeah, we did do one of that. Do you remember who interviewed us?
Yes, I do. It was Jules.
Jules Breach.
And Jules, if you're listening, you're going down this week, by the way.
FPL.
This
needs explaining.
Yeah, it's a fantasy football league.
Battle Breach, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm about the only person who's in this who I don't know. So
okay.
I might have to join it. I've got my fantasy team. I missed out the first week, though. I did it too late, so I've only been playing 1 week, not two.
So it's,
I have no idea what you two are about.
Oh, you need to do fantasy football. Okay. It's great.
But I got beaten by Gordon Smith last week by 1 point. I was not happy. But there was all sorts of things going on with Latest. Mm. And famously, you've got the Albion night on a Thursday night.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I can't go, too much into the detail of it, but, there were shows that were gotten rid of, unfortunately. And Albion night, unfortunately, is now one of those as well, because we can't show the matches anymore because they're Premier League. The Premier League own the rights. We had a deal with the Football League where we could show the Brighton games, but we can't get that with the Premier League, unfortunately. So we are hoping to have a new Albion fan show in, start doing that. And we're also...
What?
Well, it might be quite nice.
That's a silly idea, isn't it?
Who would do that?
Oh, stupid. Fans for fans.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Dumb idea.
When has that idea ever been done before?
No,
in
quite.
But, so we've got that. And hopefully as well, we're trying to work on... I can't go into too much detail again. We're trying to work on some things for highlighting the women's team again this season. And if that all pans out, that would be great as well, because I think they're excellent as well.
About covering the disabled teams, so they, you know, because the Albion community have several disabled teams.
Yeah, I mean, think that's something I've wanted to do for a long time. It's really tough at latest, just because we're such a small team, to get the coverage of everything that we want to do.
But, all I do know is if you want to watch the Albion Power Chair team play, you have to go to Nottingham, because that's where they all play.
There's a lot going on in Nottingham Power Chair wise, isn't there?
Well, the thing is, that's where all the teams go. They all congregate in one place to play all their round of games and then disappear back, you know, rather than playing home and away.
So. Yeah, the Albion Power Chair team are very good. They're very successful. Yeah, absolutely, they're fantastic. Yeah. But yeah, it's good. Yeah, to answer your question fully, it's really nice to be involved locally with football, especially because that is my major passion, and to be able to bring that to an audience is fantastic.
Okay. Well, speaking of an audience, we've recently been contacted by...
I thought you were going to say, well, on the Wednesday the 6th of September, we've got
we'll have an audience
with...
Good, well done.
Bob Booker, Mark McGee. Listen, I'll cram them in as much as well. If people don't come along, it's not because they don't know.
Yeah, there is that. But, we've been contacted, and I put a note out on Twitter this week as well, asking for if there are any more, because there's, with the advent of our recent success, there's been more and more people from overseas following the Albion. Obviously, some of them famously are expats who are living in foreign climes now and still keep an eye on their favourite team. But of course, there are others who are just coming up from all over the place. So what we want to do is try and get you all into contact with each other. And if you are listening, we know we have got a lot of people who do listen to this show in other countries. And there could possibly be one of these groups near you. So, obviously with the extended TV coverage we've got at the moment, maybe you could get together, have a few beers together and make friends.
Well, it's also, I think, that this is, might well even be incumbent on them, if they should feel like doing so, is that now that we are in the Premier League, those individual ones, I mean, I think probably the biggest one is obviously Steve Longley, Seagulls Down Under.
Yes, absolutely.
But there will be... natives as well as expats, but there'll be natives who will want to pick a favourite Premier League team, and it's almost incumbent on them to actually be the cheerleaders, the standard bearers, and say, right, well, come and support us, because we'd ask that as well, you know. And if that's the case and you find having a success, let us know.
Yeah, I mean one success story is of course the Werner Schroer's Dutch Seagulls, which is they have a magazine and everything that you can
absolutely
get. And Werner and Lido often come over here and always bringing other people with them to come.
And lots of beers as well. This is why you mainly want to mention.
You've just mentioned Seagulls Down Under. They have their very own Renth game.
Which is taking place on October the 28th this year in Sydney. So if you happen to be in that neck of the woods, do go down and support them. They beat Palace every year, unlike the game here, which often yo-yos one way and the other. But but do go there. I mean, it's always played in about 30 degrees heat. They have a barbecue where we don't. But it's good fun, and they do very well, and it's very, very keenly supported over there. So if you're in Sydney, get yourself over there. Yeah.
Another one is the Irish Seagulls, which they've got the Facebook group, and they're always... arranging meets in and around Dublin to watch our games.
How many of them
games
are there, do you know?
There's quite a few. Okay. There's quite a few. I couldn't tell you exactly how many, but I didn't count them. another one, American Seagulls, that's on Twitter. They are based in the Massachusetts and West Hampshire region. In fact, any of you American groups who want Albion Raw to come over there and do a live show, please pay for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're happy to come over there and we'll do an Albion Raw live for you.
I'm not sure we'll get our visas accepted.
Stateside Seagulls, they're based in and around Washington. There's an
Hang
Italian...
On, which what, Washington State or Washington, D.C.? Mm.
Just said Washington. On the
right, thing. Okay. Probably State.
Tyne and Wear.
Yeah. there's an Italian Seagulls, and there's also expat Seagulls, which are in and around
that's in
New
Costa
York,
Rica. No, expats are in Costa
are
Rica,
they?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, no, that's pretty incredible.
So
better at football than us. They're better at the World Cup than us.
If there's any more of you, please get in contact with us. We'll give you a shout-out, and then maybe more people can join in with you, and, you know, we've got a bit of community.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, well, one thing we didn't want to talk about today or ever again.
I think we have to.
Head at Leicester on Saturday. Leicester side, they've dealt with it now.
Yeah, I'm not so convinced. Obviously, we didn't go, but we've heard the similar story from so many
people. Jamie, you were there, weren't you?
Yeah,
I was. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, in that case, yeah, go for it.
It's one of those things that I think football fans, so I think, you know, I don't want to say that it was provoked, because nothing like that is ever provoked and it should never be done. Mm. But it's the sort of thing, you know, where Brighton fans, I think the chant was, certain place is a certain word, I want to go home.
Yeah. Which is a terrible one anyway.
It's an awful chant, really. Yeah. But I mean...
it might be true.
But you still... And then
absolutely.
I think the homophobic chant came off the back of that. And it was a sort of, you know, you're going to insult us, we're going to insult you sort of thing. But it's just not nice to see. And, you know, it was a stage where... You know, the "we can see you holding hands" stuff is like, you know, that's the go-to one. But there was a stage where, you know, it went past that. It became much more than that. And, you know, there were people in the Brighton end that I could see that, you know, were taking it very hard. And there was, you know, a couple of people who were, like, you know, genuinely quite upset by it. And
well, I mean, we've had this conversation here before. And
that's the tragedy.
And we've had Football v Homophobia on here. We've had people from the Justin campaign in here.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we've always asked the question, where does it stop becoming banter? And
there's a mindset. Listen, there has to be a mindset to think that actually you're going to use that sort of thing as a derogatory thing in the first place. Mm-hmm. So there's a mindset that thinks about it. And there's a mindset that actually then does it. And sometimes you have one or two leaders and the rest will be just sheep and they'll go along with it. And they think it's harmless banter. And the fact is that a lot of it just sort of washes over us, doesn't necessarily follow that it's perfectly acceptable and misses the point completely. Because from there, when it goes unchecked and unchallenged, that's when you get empowered and that's where you get confidence to actually say, well, it'll either go one or two ways. They'll either think, oh, we're not getting through to them, so forget it. Or, right, well, we're not getting through to them, so let's really make them listen. And that's where it gets really, really nasty. And there are individuals that we know that have, you know, it's when it gets to the one-on-one stuff. Mm. And a lot of ignorant people will conflate homosexuality with paedophilia. Or you'll have shouting at people who are with their kids. And we're talking aggressive stuff and stuff which is sometimes alien to people who are actually a lot more educated and considered along these lines. There is no reason for it. There is no excuse for it. The whole banter thing of your place is a toilet, I want to go home, is one thing. You know, you're not impressed with that town. Mm. That's one thing. I also despise the "we pay your benefits." I mean, that's just so divisive and horrible. I mean, that's just my opinion, but I have no, I can't see why it's. And the answer is, of course, not everyone. That's just sort of indicative of divisive society. This, on the other hand, is something completely different. The fact that it's illegal doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. I mean, we have so many laws in this country where, you know, just because it's illegal, it's not, whether it's immoral, whether it's wrong, whether it's, you know, the law is an ass or whatever it is. But the point is this is illegal. And there are just so many people, because we've actually had to put up with it for so long, it's a different kettle of fish for us. But now that we're in the Premier League, and this is the point I eventually want to get round to making, I've noticed that the national press are now picking up on it. All right, they're zeroing in on Leicester, but Leicester are not the only ones to do this in the time
happen to be the first people we've played this season away. Yeah.
This season, and, you know, and Leicester City saying they've picked up on it. And I'm thinking, if dozens of people are shouting and two people got ejected, I can't say they really have sorted it out.
Leicester sort of glossed over it a little, because they said those people got ejected, but what happens to them now? Do they keep their season ticket? Are they allowed to go back?
Well, we're not sure. I think someone did say they got a caution, but does that mean they get an automatic ban? I don't know. And if they can actually isolate and identify those who were clearly, you know, on film and CCTV afterwards, we don't know. They may yet make a statement saying, well, we finished our investigation, X, Y, Z are getting banned. Okay, fine. And you'd like to think then there's at least some kind of educational thing that goes on and says, look, this is not acceptable. Mm. But no, the fact that the press are now picking up on it actually sort of grates me a little bit. The fact they're doing it is better, and it highlights the issue. But they're only doing it because we're in the Premier League.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and
yeah,
I find that even then the press, therefore, and I'm talking about the quality press here, the good football writers, are only picking up on it now because we're in the Premier League.
But isn't it good that they're picking up on it after the first away game where it's happened?
Yes.
And we've only actually played one game away from home this season. I mean, largely...
But
largely,
it happened last season. It happened the season before.
Well,
yeah.
Well, to be honest, largely last season, I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen, but it was largely eradicated from because we've played these people before, and it's education now. That's what it
so
was,
if you're saying
education.
That, the thing is, we have played Leicester City in the time that we've been at the Amex before. So we've played at, as you put it, the Crisp Bowl. And you think, well, if it didn't happen before, why is it happening now? What's going on? Something has happened. Are they being emboldened? Are the things not in place? Or is it just the fact that, again, they're now in the Premier League, that it's now being heightened? Somewhere down the line, and I'm fully supportive, and the likes of Football v Homophobia are going to be strengthening their resolve. And, I mean, it's all right, it's zeroing in on us, and we've therefore highlighted it. But we turn around and say, well, we know this happens. We know. the fact that, you know, you're not reporting it is not the issue. We know.
But, I mean, how much of it is... I mean, it's very, very stereotypical, and we are, and we fit that stereotype. We're from Brighton, therefore...
Therefore we're gay, yeah. Which is irrelevant.
But, I mean there, obviously there are other areas of the country that have got other things attached to it, but they don't seem to have...
Well,
like,
if you're talking about, for instance, this whole thing of, you know, your incest with Norwich City or Cardiff, the Sheep Shaggers or something like that, and you think, well, actually, those things are illegal. So, you know, the actual acts themselves, you can accuse them of that. Yes, in that sense, you could accuse... But
again, that's just another stereotype, which is pandered to by mass crowds. Mm.
Yes, and I find it, you know, unnecessary as well. I mean, you know full well that people in Cardiff don't have carnal relations with... or ovine creatures. You know that doesn't happen. It's a ridiculous thing. You just think, well, they're a rural community, therefore that's what they do. Or, you know, in Norwich, they've never actually, or Norfolk, they've never left there, so that everyone has to interbreed. And, of course, you know that doesn't happen. Mm. But the fact is that this is a city that does have a large gay culture.
Yeah.
And to actually be abusive on the back of that. Mm. I take your point. Yes, yeah, the incest or the what do you call it, shagging sheep. Oh.
Well,
this is outrageous. But
let's hope this is the first time we have to mention it this season.
Oh, it was the last time.
The only time.
And, you know, it's one away game down. We've got a few more to go. And obviously, Watford today.
I think it'll be fine. I mean, Watford actually used to have to put up with this nonsense with Elton John himself. You know, it wasn't the fans per se, but
The famous one of Watford, we're going to nick your sweets and lollipops. But.
Well, that was actually kind of, I think it was a backhanded compliment that was, just because they were the first ones to actually really promote family values and the ground. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there was another game this week which we need
deep
to talk
joy.
About, and it was all change and for the game against Barnet. But I mean, did you actually see any of the game, or were you too busy shielding your eyes?
I thought those lights were excellent. Actually, I thought they were really good.
What?
I didn't see them.
Well, they have to be. They are everywhere. They're even in under the north and south stand roof now. Were you in the east stand?
No,
you
were
in the
west
stand.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we haven't seen a game under the floodlights in the west stand upper, where for the previous 5 years, it looks like the eastern side of the pitch looks as though it's kind of there's too many shadows and darkness. I would imagine that's probably been eradicated. I don't know if you could pick that up from the west stand lower.
Well, I felt that we're watching the game in 3D. But with
it was bright, absolutely. But
well, obviously, we're watching it in 3D. Obviously,
Well, yes,
extra 3D.
Yeah. That's what live is. Yeah, which is what we're doing, incidentally, on Wednesday, the 6th of September, where you can actually watch in 3D some radio with Bob Booker and Mark McGee on the stage with me and AD. Come along to the Comedia; those tickets are on sale. They're in 3D too. No, they're not. They're in 2D.
Yeah. That was my plug of the night.
Well, Al's going to be there. He'll be scratch and sniff. It'll be great.
That's not very. Yeah, probably, but.
You can charge for that.
Yeah, he usually does. right, moving on.
Yes, bright lights. Yes,
it was very bright.
Actually, and I think it improved. Actually, I just hope someone doesn't turn up in one of those luminous, away kits.
Well, it clearly spurred us on to our first win of the season.
Evidently,
that's what helped.
Yeah.
Bright lights.
Okay, so there was a debut for Mullumbi on this one, Aaron Connolly was my pre-season.
Is that the one that me and Marcus said who?
Yeah, I said my wild card is going to make his first team debut.
Did you say his league debut?
I did say his league debut.
Right. Ooh, okay. So you got League Cup is not quite the same.
No, it's not quite. But he's in the reckoning now.
Okay. All right.
With his very very large shirt number, number 70, wasn't he?
No, that was James Tilley. He was 66. Connolly was 66. I thought Mullumbi did very very well. Actually, I thought he was superb. I didn't realise until afterwards he's only 12, but I thought he did absolutely brilliantly. I mean, he played the kind of the Liam Bridcut role. So it was a bit of a departure from Houghton's normal way of playing. I thought.
Well, we'll talk about departures in a minute, but there was a rare start for Richie Tao, Nicky Mempart, and Rowan Ince, who's subsequently now gone on loan to Bury for the season.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that in a minute. There was also game time for Anthony Knockhart, and, he had a bad miss, didn't he? And then he lost his head.
It was not his best game.
No.
He was struggling to get past the Barnet players a couple of times, which I thought... The thing with Knockhart is he's fantastic, he's brilliant, but he always tries to do too much. He always tries to go too far with the ball. He gets past a couple of players and then thinks, oh, I'll take on another, when he shouldn't take on another. He should lay it off to someone else. And that's what I hope he doesn't do in the Premier League, because you'll get found out that way so easily.
I'm just wondering if he thought, well, it's only Barnett, so I'll do another trick here.
Maybe.
So maybe.
But even then, he was getting found out. So
yes, he was. Although, I mean, but I thought Barnett did very well, actually.
I thought they did. I thought they were impressive.
But yeah. the chance with Knockhart was actually... put through, and well, he created most, a lot of it himself. He really, really should have scored.
He just,
like you said, he tried to do a little bit too much.
What a show off.
And then there was an issue where he got booked because he practically headbutted the linesman.
He was gobbing off. It was a long, long way for us. It was on the opposite corner of the pitch to us. But not literally lost his head. That would be problematic.
No.
But
yeah,
I think it was. Someone said he was yellow carded at half time, and he was certainly subbed. For
Tilly.
And so, I think more importantly, it's just nice to see him get some game time and stretch legs a bit, and hopefully he'll be fit for today and it'll be all right.
Well, one player that Jay Malumbi, was okay, bits and pieces. I mean, Rowan Ince, I thought, had a great game. Probably
we saw the telescope stuff again, which was really nice. I mean,
it probably was his last game for us, but we do have a recall option for him, and so he could come back in January if we need to.
Right. Yeah, I thought he was good.
But one player who did impress me was the new Czech fullback Matejew.
I must be standing alone in that case, because I thought he was a bit sort of neither here nor there.
Yeah, I don't think he did a whole lot. I wasn't blown away by him.
No. He was okay.
You mentioned Malumbi. In terms of players who have not played in the first team before, Malumbi was the one that impressed me the most.
Yeah, I agree.
But, in terms of the ones that impressed me overall, it would have been the Ince. It was great to see Connor Goldson back.
Absolutely.
I thought Goldson
and Hunemeyer made it look easy.
I think they're a really good centre-back pairing, just like Dunk and Duffy as well. Mm. I think we've got four really strong centre-backs.
Mm. And Nicky Minpar looked great as well.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, that. All right, Barnett had a few chances, but I thought that, the defence, by and large, and with Rossini there as well, basically looked comfortable. But,
there was that penalty shout, wasn't there, for
Barnett?
Well,
I've got that, yeah. It was a bit of a penalty let-off. I mean, to be fair, I mean, it was right in front of us, and I've spoken to people about it.
From where I saw, we all
disagree with each other. I'm saying it wasn't a penalty, and Nempar got the ball. And the ref agreed with me, so I'm going with
that. So that's a win.
So it probably means you are wrong then.
But this is something, I mean, I've subsequently watched the highlights of this one, and it's not on the highlights. Mm. So what's going on? This is something that something else I picked up on. Seagulls TV aren't necessarily...
If only we could ask someone within the TV industry could actually sort that out.
Yeah. Well, I don't have control of those highlights, unfortunately.
But even on
League
the,
Cup's not in our jurisdiction.
Even on the game highlights, it's nowhere near as good as it was last
season.
Too
contentious.
And it's not, and they're not long enough either, as they were last season. And they're missing a lot of stuff. So, no.
Yeah, I was about to say, you'd never know the football season's back, hooray, would you?
But
okay, you're going to say something happy in a minute.
But, okay, well, let's talk about the goal then, because, I'm delighted for
James. James Tilly, I've been watching with our good friend Andy Bass. Happy birthday, mate! Who we've been watching him a couple of years ago. I remember him playing a pre-season game against Lewis, and he really shone. Mm. And you have to really shine within the development squad to think you're actually going to get a chance ever of making up to the first team. Is he going to be a first team regular? You can't tell at the moment. Fact is, it's the likes of the League Cup is where those players get blooded. Will he play up against Bournemouth? Who knows? But he looked busy. And he was there sniffing around, picking up the scrap for the winning goal.
It was a Matejew cross to Liam Rossini, who had a little bit of a jig in the box. Did your mate there, Al?
Yeah.
And he got a shot away, which the keeper saved. But Tilly was there to mop it up and fire home the rebound.
Yeah,
indeed.
That's the. I think Tilly was impressive. I think, like you say, you said it about Connolly, but I think that if there was going to be any sort of players that make their first team appearances this season, I'd say Tilly. Obviously, he made that one for a brief spell against Borough, didn't he, a couple of years ago?
Yes.
But I'd say he'll probably get, if there were any who were going to get a bit more of a run out, I'd go for either him or Malumbi there too.
Sure.
Okay, well, we'll leave that one there. As I was mentioning there, that the next game is Bournemouth in September.
I mean, who knows? I mean, let's say it's a Premier League club. Are they going to put out a full-strength side? I mean, it is sad that these football competitions. I mean, this one's only.
Oh,
sort
did
of
you mention? Did you mention the competition now?
We'll come to that in a minute. No, you're right. This point I was going to make is just petering out badly. So should we run our competition then?
We're going to talk about Peter the Micro Pig in a minute.
God, that was smooth, wasn't
that
it?
That was great.
Yeah, we have got a competition for you, and so We've got the question for you. Al, what can you win?
Okay, what can you win? One lucky person is going to be winning a copy of Nick Japanik's excellent book, Brighten Up, which is, I can't remember the subtitle, but it's basically about the last two seasons at the Albion. You can win a copy of Greville Waterman's Ooh Ah, the Bob Booker story, which you can also buy on the night of Wednesday, the 6th of September at Comedia, when Bob himself will be there signing them.
Oh, will Mark McGee be there as well?
I think he will be there as well.
How much are the tickets for that?
It's £10 to get in. Yes.
Where are they available?
At Comedy Box Office.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, okay. And yes, and you'll also we're also offering a copy of J.J. Waller's Brighton and Hove Albion, which is an excellent pictorial over the last 20 years, all in full glorious colour.
That's a great book. I've had a look at that. It's fantastic.
It is wonderful. So, Adrian, what is the question that you're going to set our listener?
The question is, in light of, well, we've had to base it about around Bob, Bob okay. Booker, because...
so what was Queen's first hit?
No. Yeah, that's it, yeah.
No, that's not the question, folks.
No, but how many managers has Bob Booker been assistant to? That's how many managers...
How many different managers?
That's at Brighton only, by the way.
Yeah.
Has Bob Booker been assistant to? So answers, please, to thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. Yeah,
that's the... that's thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk.
Yeah.
And we'll randomly take... the winner from any of the correct answers. One answer, one entry, please, per person, and families and sponsors, that's you, Shelley, may not enter.
We'll do some sort of draw on this. Guests can enter.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I might be on my phone in 5 minutes.
Okay, you're on.
Something non-competition related.
So, again, that's how many managers has Bob Booker been assistant to and answers
at Brighton,
to...
At Brighton and Hove Albion.
At Brighton and Hove Albion. And the answers to thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk.
Good luck, everyone. Sorry, can I just say also, I do have to mention this, that thank you to City Books for co-sponsoring that particular competition.
Mm. Okay. Did you know, right, that pigs, sweating like a pig is a misnomer. They don't actually sweat, only through their noses. Yeah.
That is, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Where did you learn that particular little tidbit from?
I Googled micro pigs.
Why would you Google micro pigs, Adrian? We will get there eventually.
Because Jose Escuerdo has one.
He has a micro pig.
His home in Colombia.
And what can you get from a micro pig apart from just chipolatas?
Well, you know what? Miniature micro pigs.
You can get hours of fun and enjoyment.
They are very intelligent animals. And according to David DeSalvo, who's writing in Forbes, they are widely considered to be the smartest domesticated animal in the world.
Really?
Mm.
Damn,
yeah, they could things like they can move a cursor on a video screen with their snouts and even learn to distinguish between scribbles. Yeah,
I always think back to Rick from The Young Ones at this point. Oh, yes, and who did invent the internal combustion engine? Was it Porky the Pig? I don't think so.
But he's also a lover of sunglasses. And
there was a lovely picture of him. Was it? I think he's just coming off the pitch, having played for Bruges. Looking, I think it was just, I actually just thought it was an Edgar Davids impersonation.
But, I mean, reading what he said about them, he says, yeah, I collect sunglasses, but I've given them all away. Surely that means he's not collecting them.
I thought you were going to say he collected micro pigs.
No,
I think that's just...
I think we should collect micro pigs.
Actually,
anyway.
Can I just say, actually, we were talking about pigs, the story that we were talking about on the way in. Mm. Vegetarians, look away from the radio now. Go on, Jamie.
Oh, this story. I can't remember what I was saying to her, I couldn't remember where it was or where it was based, but it was somewhere in the UK, I believe. And there was a fire somewhere. I think it must have been a farm or something. And these firemen were called in, and they saved all these piglets. And then as a reward to the firemen, the person who owned the pigs then killed the pigs and served them up to the firemen. And I thought that was just—I thought that was very cruel. I thought it was—and
they could have had their very own hog roast. Didn't they?
Well, but so if they just leave the fire going.
They saved them from death to give them death.
Save them from fire to give them fire.
So they saved their bacon.
I know.
Okay, we're running out of time.
Okay, so vegetarians, welcome back.
Okay, so the transfer window is closing next week. And obviously, we've already
lost stuff, haven't we?
We've just lost on Dalmeina.
Yeah.
Obviously, for obvious reasons. So, I mean, the club will have other targets that they want to bring in.
It's strikers. Basically, it's what we need is fast strikers, isn't it?
Does it concern you that so far we've spent £50 million?
I think it's great. I never thought we'd be in a position where we're spending that much money. I think it's fantastic. But the question is whether we spent it in the right places.
Does that 50 million quid include the domain of stuff which now isn't getting spent?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so it's 40 now. 40. That's still quite an impressive number.
Yeah. Still obscene, actually.
Yeah, it is, isn't it, when you think. But we spent more than Bournemouth.
I'm just thinking what good you can do for society with 44 million quid.
We've spent more than a small club like Crystal Palace, isn't it?
Have we spent more than Tottenham as well?
No, they just spent 40 million.
Oh,
yeah,
of course they have, yeah.
I'm
embarrassed that we're having these number type conversations.
I am appalled.
I think the money is arbitrary, really.
Will we try and balance the books a little bit? Will anyone else go? Obviously, Rowan Ince has already gone for the season.
Tottenham's halfpenny in comparison, isn't it?
Richie Towell's going to go out on loan. Is anyone going to come in for anyone?
There are players that I would like to see leave because I don't feel like they're contributing enough to the team.
Are we talking about after Tuesday's game, a particular Czech winger?
Yes, I am actually. Yeah, how did you know?
Because I think everyone said the same.
But yeah, I think it's. I don't think it's a case of balancing the books this season. I think that'll be, you know, next season, no matter what happens, whether we stay up, whether we go down. I think that'll be for next year. I think the club can probably expect to take a loss this year, but I think that if we stay up, it'll be all worth it.
I was about to say, I mean, just wondering to what extent FFP works in this thing. I think, don't you have to sort of lose a couple of small countries?
Yeah.
You know, lose the debt of a couple of small countries in order, or probably actually this country as well.
For it to be actually fair.
For actually to be sort of, you know, you break your own rules.
Yeah, I'm not fully sure what the rules surrounding it are, to be honest, because I see clubs get fined, and I'm like, why are they getting fined? And then certain clubs who you think should be fined, and they're not fined, and you're like, well, why haven't they been fined? So I don't fully know how the financial fair play actually works, to be honest.
In the Premier, I mean, we had, years ago when Paul Barber came on and explained FFP to us, and he might as well explain the third law of thermonuclear dynamic physics to us, because there were so many buts and get-outs and utterly confusing. You probably times that by 20 in the Premier League, throw in a couple of sort of, you know, banana skins, and it's ridiculous. No idea. So just keep spending, Tony. If you've got the money, just, you know, spend, you know.
Yeah, keeps in the Premier League.
We'll all be dead soon. So, yeah.
So, I mean, what else do we need? So we need another goalkeeper. We need
another striker.
Do we need another goalkeeper? I think Nick and Mayan Pass actually perfectly good enough.
I wouldn't complain.
Apparently it's de rigueur to have three goalkeepers.
I wouldn't Kasper. Complain at another goalkeeper. We've got Christian Morton, though. He's out on loan.
He's out on loan.
Well, Casper's still here.
Casper, yeah.
Remember him.
I remember him playing a few games.
He used to be famous.
Yeah, he used to be good, didn't he?
Yeah.
I don't think we need another goalkeeper. I wouldn't complain if another goalkeeper came in.
Okay.
But I think we need another striker. That's the necessity. We need a striker.
Everyone, I mean, Hewton's spoken about. Listen, yeah. I've actually read the first half of Nick Schapanik's book, and actually he's screaming about it from 2 years previous, right at the beginning. We need strikers.
Our best striker at the minute is Sam Baldock for the Premier League, and he's injured. So we need another one.
Absolutely.
And fast. Because if obviously, you know, there's today, but in the coming weeks, you know, if we take on the likes of West Brom and Bournemouth, and no discredit to those teams because they're fantastic teams, but if we're not creating chances in those games, that's when you need to start worrying and being like, what's wrong here?
Well, could someone like Esquerdo play up front?
Well, that's the thing. You could play
Esquerdo. Is he supposed to?
Could you play Knockout? I thought he was a winger.
We've tried Knockout on the number 10 role before, but it's
you could play. You could essentially play Gross up front, I guess, if you
in
wanted
theory,
to.
I mean, Murphy can do it as well. I mean, Murphy played in. I mean, I know it doesn't really count, but he played in Scotland as a striker. So
yeah,
Aaron Connolly.
No, not yet.
James Tilly.
Well, yeah, I mean, these are kids and not ready yet, so no, we're not there yet.
No, we need another striker, maybe two.
Yes.
But that's all depending. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that sadly is all we've got time for this week. So I've just a quick reminder, the Albion Rule Live at the Comedia on the 6th of September, an evening with Bob Booker and Mark McGee. Tickets priced £10 from the Comedia box office, or in person or online.
Just quickly point out that it's actually cheaper to do it in person. Next expensive is do it online. Next expensive still is do it on the phone. So if you want to do it and you're in town, preferably Saturday, you're not going to Watford, or Sunday where you've got plenty of chance, or even Monday where you've got the day off, wander into the Comedia box office and buy your tickets.
Or when you get paid. Doesn't matter. We don't care.
Absolutely.
But a chance just to reiterate, you've got a chance to win these three fantastic books, which are?
They are Greville Waterman's Who Are the Bob Booker Story, Nick Schapanik's Brighten Up, and J.J. Waller's Brighton and Hove Albion.
Please answer the following question.
I will answer it correctly.
Yes. How many managers has Bob Booker been assistant to at Brighton and Hove Albion? And answers to thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. And that's it, folks. Thank you to Jamie Walker. Thank you to Alan Wears. Mm-hmm. I've been Aidy Packham. Thanks to Phil Shilley at oldfootballshirts.com. And thanks to you for listening. And we'll see you again next week. Cheers. Bye.